Our next speaker is Walter Bradley. He's speaking on fine-tuning of the universe, evidence for the existence of God. And he has his PhD in material science from University of Texas at Austin. He's a fellow of the ASA and the American Society of Materials, Executive Council Service. Thank you, Walter. I know all about that now. He's co-author of The Mystery of Life's Origin, Reassessing Current Theories, and the author of 11 book chapters on faith and science. Let's welcome Walter.
Thank you. If I had been doing a proof of the program, I would have put a question mark after of the existence of God, okay, because my whole presentation today has to do with what does fine-tuning really tell us, if anything? So let's get started on that. Okay, so I want to talk about fine-tuning of the universe. Is it evidence for, but not proof of, the existence of God? Obviously, it's not proof of, but there's always this issue about whether it's even evidence for. Fine-tuning is really popular today. It addresses one of the great mysteries of the universe. It may have significant metaphysical implications. Even atheists like Stephen Hawking note that it's difficult to discuss the beginning of the universe without mentioning the concept of God. My work on the origin of the universe is the borderline between science and religion. This is Stephen Hawking speaking. Time magazine ran an article back in 1992 talking about all of the amazing things that seem to have to be just right for life to exist on our planet, so even that far back. There's many examples in recent books. You've probably seen, maybe even read some of these books, so this is a topic that's very popular in the public domain. Napoleon and Laplace had an interesting conversation. Napoleon asked the wrong question. He was asking Laplace, where is God in your mechanism or model? And Laplace said that God was not in the mechanism. It's one of those contradictions that people sometimes don't understand. God is the creator of the mechanism, one that did not require further tinkering by God. Napoleon asked the wrong question. He was simply confused. Fine-tuning, is it a God of the gaps argument? Occasionally, as I have opportunity to speak on this, I'll have somebody raise the question, isn't this just a God of the gaps argument? And oddly enough, this is one of those topics which doesn't divide along the lines of theist and atheist having different views. Some theists and some non-theists say no. Other theists say yes. My interest today is trying to figure out, are the differences for philosophical or scientific reasons, okay? God of the gaps or multi-universe, for example. Are these differences really more semantical? Let me begin with my presuppositions when I talk on a topic like this. God created and sustains the universe to provide a place for complex conscious life to exist. The laws of nature describe God's customary way of caring for his creation. Miracles are God's extraordinary way of caring for his creation. I think a lot of times people think that we allow miracles, then this somehow becomes problematic because we can easily fall into the trap of having a God of the gaps kind of a mindset. But I would say that if God does part of it in customary ways and part of it in extraordinary ways, then you would expect to have some places where our natural explanations are by themselves incomplete. And so I think that the question is whether indeed that's so and whether that's a proper way to understand or to think about it. I think when we address issues like this, they're in some ways different than our usual scientific questions. And two famous scientists from the past, Hansen and Peirce, proposed, really, I think about 1910, 1920, I may be wrong, abduction as a way of thinking about this. It's a distinct form of logical inference. Observations of some surprising, even astonishing phenomena, which is anomalous to existing ways of thinking, realization that these phenomena would not be seen to be astonishing if a certain hypothesis H pertained, there is therefore good reason for proposing that H be considered to be correct. I think in some of the topics that we're discussing when we're talking about unique events in natural history, then in some ways trying to approach these in the usual way that we do a lot of our scientific work becomes a little bit more problematic. You can't always go back and run experiments to try to confirm whether in fact a proposed idea or hypothesis is true or not. This is sometimes called inference to the best explanation. When induction, hypothesis, deduction isn't possible, inference to the best explanation, abduction, is always an alternative way to propose a possible explanation. Note that inference to the best explanation gives answers that are not as authoritative as a predictive science, but it may be the only option when a unique event is being investigated. Scientific proof of the existence of God is impossible. So let me be clear about that at the beginning. Whatever I'm trying to claim with my presentation today, we need to understand that scientific work is always an affirmation that is tentative based on current empirical data. Since God is not physical, but spiritual, and therefore cannot be confirmed directly by the usual scientific approach. However, the nature of nature might give one evidence that is more or less likely, that it's either more or less likely that the universe was created by an intelligent, purposeful God. Here's an example. This is a picture taken from the second page of Richard Dawkins' book, Climbing Mount Improbable. And at the beginning of his book, he shows this picture. He said, this is actually a rock formation in Hawaii that at a certain time of the year, at a certain time of day, it cast a shadow that has a remarkable resemblance to a famous American president. Those of you who are my age will recognize probably pretty quickly, this looks a lot like John F. Kennedy. Yeah, I hope everybody's seeing where the... Okay, this is the silhouette. This is his nose, his mouth, okay, his chin, his forehead, his tuft of hair. Now, doesn't that look like JFK? Well, if some of you are old enough to remember what JFK looked like, it would be helpful. Now, Dawkins proposes the following. He said, is this an artifact of nature that happened naturally, or is it the consequence or result of somebody going and actually carving on this rock to make it give this image? And it could be either. Would you agree? Could be either. So how would you resolve that? Well, the simple way to resolve it would be to go and look at the rock and determine, does it have any chisel marks on it, or does it look like it's just naturally weathered? And in fact, what you would find out is it's just naturally weathered. Dawkins goes on to say, this is how it is in nature. We see many things that look as if they might be the result of intelligent activity of some sort, but on closer examination are found to be the consequence of purely natural processes. Now, he does mention in his book that this may not always be the case. He said, what would you say here? Look at what the wind, the rain, the sleet, and the hail produced. Well, obviously, this is indeed what the result of intelligent activity. If you're not familiar with this, it's Mount Rushmore. And it took a team of, I think, about 20 people and lots of dynamite to be able to form these pictures. Can you recognize who the pictures are? It's Jefferson. I'm sorry, Washington, then Jefferson. Here's the third one, Roosevelt and Lincoln, okay? So I think what we want to do in the little bit of time that we have is to consider the question, what does the natural world look like? Is it something like the rock in Hawaii that on closer examination will be found to be fully explained by simple laws of nature that we understand, or is it something more like Mount Rushmore where it takes something more than just the laws of nature to produce. Okay, so I'm going to talk about four kinds of fine-tuning because the idea is, or the question is, does fine-tuning really support the idea of the existence of God? Or must one believe that there is a God and then fine-tuning becomes a way of sort of confirming or affirming that position? Mathematical forms that nature take, the values of universal constants, initial conditions, and our lucky rare earth. Okay, so let me go through this relatively quickly. the mathematical form that nature takes. Copernicus, Galileo, Kepler, and Newton all believe that the universe is orderly and described by mathematics because God fashioned it that way. Albert Einstein famously said the most incomprehensible thing about the universe is its comprehensibility, its mathematical forms. More extensively, Albert Einstein put it this way: "You may find it strange that I consider the comprehensibility of the world as a miracle or as an eternal mystery. Well, a priori, one should expect a chaotic world which cannot be grasped by the mind in any way. The kind of order created by Newton's theory of gravitation, for example, is wholly different. Even if man proposes the axioms of the theory, the success of such a project presupposes a high degree of ordering of the objective world, and this could not be expected a priori. That is the miracle which is being constantly reinforced as our knowledge expands." Here's a picture of five of the most important, what I'd like to call, characteristics of nature. These are five fundamental laws of nature. The first one is the Hamiltonian equation representation of Newtonian mechanics. Maxwell's equations are electrodynamics and statistical mechanics. Boltzmann's equations of thermodynamics. Quantum mechanics of Schrodinger's equation are described by Schrodinger's equation, and then general relativity. Now, I like to think of these more than just as mathematical forms. I think these are descriptions of critical characteristics of nature, that if that characteristic of nature was not part of the overall characterization of nature, would leave the universe minus some critically important characteristics that allow complex conscious life to exist. Paul Davies says, "All the evidence so far indicates that many complex structures depend most delicately on the existing forms of these laws. It is tempting, therefore, to believe that a complex universe will emerge only if the laws of physics are close to what they are. The laws seem to be the product of exceedingly ingenious design." Okay, let's talk a second kind of evidence, the design of the universe, second kind of fine-tuning. "Many of the parameters in the universe seem to be precisely tuned to allow humans to exist." Probably the first book that I read on this topic, and I think it's a classic still, The Anthropic Cosmological Principle, had a couple of hundred good examples produced by Frank Tepler and John Barrow, both at the time in British universities, listing over 100 such examples. Things like the speed of light, Planck's constant, Boltzmann's constant, the unit charge, gravity force constant, the masses of the neutron, electron, and proton. One of the surprising discoveries of the second half of the 20th century was that we used to think if you change the values of some of these, then the nature would be a little different and life would be a little different to be compatible with that. What we have discovered, though, is that small changes in any of these constants produce rather draconian changes in nature that make it unsuitable for life of any type. Here's one simple example. What are the requirements for the universal constants to match photon light energy from the sun to chemical bonding energy for organic chemistry? If we're going to get our energy source from the sun and we're going to use some sort of photosynthetic process, the chemistry of the elements involved in that and their bonding energies and so forth have to be compatible with the energy level coming from the sun. You'll notice that the equation on the left must be larger than the one on the right, but of the same order of magnitude. If we substitute the six universal constants into this rather interesting and highly nonlinear equation, one part to the 12th power, another part to the 4th power, we find that the term on the left is 5.9 times 10 to the minus 39th, on the right, 2 times 10 to the minus 39th, and amazingly enough, we have six different constants that combine themselves or have values that allow us to have exactly the matching of energy, photosynthetic energy from the sun to the photosynthesis that takes place on Earth. Paul Davies, writing with regard to this, said, "There's, for me, powerful evidence there is something going on behind it all. It seems as though somebody has fine-tuned nature's numbers to make the universe. The impression of design is overwhelming." Okay, a third condition, the Big Bang. Stephen Hawking has said or indicated that the energy or velocity of the Big Bang shortly after it occurred is critical to have our universe. If it were different by one part in 10 trillion, the universe would either have collapsed on itself or never condensed into stars and planets. So another example of what you might call accidents of nature are the result of a careful design. Peter Ward and Donald Brownlee, in their book Rare Earth, which I highly recommend, talks about the special things about planet Earth. We may say, well, there's lots of planets, and we've discovered lots of planets and other connected with other stars in the last 10 years. But the question is, how difficult is it to get a planet that has the right characteristics? At the beginning of the book, they say if some godlike, these guys are both atheists, if some godlike being could be given the opportunity to plan a sequence of events with the express purpose of duplicating our Garden of Eden, that power would face a formidable task. It is unlikely that Earth could ever be truly duplicated. Okay, very interesting. So again, this evidence of fine-tuning. 5 more minutes, okay. So what do these four kinds of fine-tuning imply? By abduction or inference to the best explanation is appropriate in this case. Note this is not proof and it is very provisional. It does not claim that a more predictive explanation will not be discovered later, such as the theory of everything, that will reduce the universe to a simple equation or equations and constants that are necessary and not accidental. Arnold Penzias says that astronomy leads us to a unique event, a universe which was created out of nothing, one with the very delicate balance needed to provide exactly the right conditions required to permit life, and one which has an underlying, one might say, supernatural plan. One of my favorite books here, The Origin of Life, but we don't have time to talk about that today. I just wanted to put a picture in there. It's the only book I ever co-authored. Okay, let me do this. Other options for explaining this improbable universe. I've had the opportunity to speak at many different universities, and the most common and almost unique question that I often get is, well, if you only have one chance, one roll of the dice, then it is highly improbable. But if you had many, many chances, then maybe what is improbable becomes probable. And the basic idea is if we have a multi-universe, if you're not familiar with it, is the idea that the universe is continually generating more and more and more universes, and that we might have as many as 10 to the 500th. And if they all have different laws of nature in their mathematical forms, if they have different universal constants, it's entirely possible that you could say that this happened, but that the statistical resources were sufficient to make this, although it looks highly improbable in one roll of the dice, if you got enough rolls of the dice, then you could say, well, maybe it happened that way. There's a couple of problems with resolving fine-tuning with the multiverse, though. There was an interesting article in the New York Times editorial page by a couple of scientists, one from University of Rochester and one from Dartmouth. And let me just simply read from their editorial. The title was Science Without Experimental Confirmation. However one creates a multiverse model, it involves mathematical equations and especially chosen constants to get the desired result. This looks like fine-tuning at the next level, to solve fine-tuning at our level, which I think is an interesting and appropriate comment. There's a second problem with the multiverse, and that is there's no way to experimentally confirm or confound it. We can't see, it's impossible to see out of our own universe, and so if there are many, many other universes, that may be something you can propose mathematically, but it's not something we can confirm experimentally. And it's, at least in my view, one of the sort of cornerstones of scientific work is the opportunity to provide experimental or empirical confirmation. Okay, so here the choices are. The universe is created for the purpose by God. A multi-universe, which might make a universe, solar system, planet with living systems feasible, okay, or a grand theory of everything that to date has been elusive. Alan Lightman, a professor of physics at MIT, wrote a terrific book in 2013 called Accidental Universe. And in this book, he acknowledges, first of all, that he's an atheist. Secondly, that he believes in the multiverse. But he says that I really don't like the multiverse because there's no empirical way to confirm it. But I'm compelled to believe it because I'm an atheist, and it's the only alternative to fine-tuning. After he spends a whole chapter describing fine-tuning in a very comprehensive way, and then says it's because of this that I have to believe in the multiverse, even though I have significant misgivings about that. He confesses he believes in the multi-universe because he is an atheist and finds it to be the only alternative to theism. Alistair McGrath, in his book A Fine-Tuned Universe, The Quest for God in Science and Theology, quotes Wendell Weibull in the following way: "The facts are known, but they're insulated and unconnected. The pearls are there, but they will not hang together until someone provides a string." I like that. Alan Sandage, many of you know, famous astronomer who became a Christian late in his career and is quoted in one of his either papers or book, I can't remember which. "It was my science that drove me to the conclusion that the world is much more complicated than science. It is only through the supernatural that I can understand the mystery of existence." Some of you know Anthony Flew is a famous philosopher and probably one of the most articulate advocates for atheism in the second half of the 20th century, who very late in his life came to faith. And here's what was in the newspaper all across the country at the time it happened. "For the last half century, the world's most famous atheist was Anthony Flew. Long before Richard Dawkins began taking swipes at religion, Flew was the preeminent spokesman for unbelief. But now Anthony Flew is the world's most famous convert to belief in God, not necessarily to Christianity. What turned his world right side up? I must say that the journey to my discovery of the divine has thus far been a pilgrimage of reason. I followed the argument where it has led me." And that was really the origin of life and fine-tuning that I think in his biography were compelling. Well, let me just close with this. I think as you look at the universe, it's amazing in all sorts of ways. In Texas, everything's bigger. And I took this off my back porch. No, I'm kidding. That's photoshopped. But the moon's almost that big in Texas. And but more importantly, I think God has left us many, many beautiful examples of the amazing universe that we have. But as we look more carefully scientifically, I think that he gives us a tremendous amount of evidence for fine-tuning that I find to be compelling, and can be compelling even to people who don't already believe necessarily that there's a God, and may in fact nudge people in that direction. So with that, I'll conclude.
Thank you, Walter. For those of you transitioning somewhere else, we have about 3 minutes for you to get wherever you're going for the next session. If you're hanging in here, we've got 3 minutes for some questions for Walter.
Yes.
Sir, thank you very much. You noticed that one of the explanations would be if there's underlying physical principles with Bayesian constants and values that they are, that they would have to be.
Sure.
And so yeah. My question is, might that not also be evidence for God? If there was
no yeah. Evidence? I think in the early part of my presentation, thank you for raising that question, I think that when we're looking at this point in time, we don't. I like to think that God did it all. Some part he did in his customary way, which would be described by natural laws. There may be some parts that were done in some extraordinary way, and at this point, I'm happy to have it either way. Okay, so I don't really need a God of the gaps if they discover some of the things that we think are. I don't even like to use the term gap. I think it's what we know. It's the basis for what we believe, not what we don't understand. Okay, what we know is very compelling. What we don't know, we'll just leave it as what we don't know. So I think the fine-tuning argument, you may say, well, that's a gap. It might be, but if it is, then it would be supplanted by something that would provide yet an alternative kind of evidence, because for me, I believe God could have done it either way. He may have done it entirely within his own customary way of caring for his creation. I think the laws of nature, for me, are better called God's customary ways of caring for his creatures. It's that pattern that he uses. But I think there, it's also possible, as we see it, that God can do things however he chooses. And so it could be either way. So I'm not unhappy if they find some of the things that we don't understand now are described in some yet more fundamental way. I'm good with that. All it does is it simply goes to the next level down. Yes?
One more question.
Is it possible, Dr. Bradley, that the gap was left there for our faith?
Anything's possible, right? It's hard to know what God might have done. But I would prefer to think that if there's something I don't understand in terms of God's patterned way of doing things, then in the future we may find a patterned answer to that. Or there may actually be places where God simply did it in some extraordinary way. And at this stage of things, I don't feel compelled to have to make that decision. I do think there's a huge amount of fingerprints almost everywhere. And it's interesting to me how many non-Christians worry about this, because they worry about the big 500 or the big elephant in the room with fine-tuning and trying to get around that, particularly, I think, more often than not with multiverse as a alternative way to try to explain that, or the grand theory of everything, if we ever find such a thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Walter.